Welcome to Victory Over Communism with Bill Gertz, the only program willing to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. Your host and guide to victory over communism is one of the nation's most experienced national security journalists, Bill Gertz, who uses unique facts, pinpoint analysis, and exclusive interviews to identify and counter today's destructive communist ideologies. Now, Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.
Welcome to the podcast. This is my 13th episode, and things are going well. I hope you're still with me. This is a really important topic. This episode looks at domestic U.S. Marxism and its destructive influence on American life. As in previous podcasts, by way of introduction, the VOC podcast is not about people. It's about ideology, communist and Marxist ideology. People in our democratic system are free to believe in whatever they like. My goal is to educate people to communist ideologies that are wrong in their fundamental precepts and have proved extremely destructive whenever Marxism-Leninism has come to power. I was intrigued recently by an article discussed a book in 1958 that explains clearly the current predicament of the nation. The book is The Naked Communist and was written by political theorist Cleon Skousen. It outlines 45 steps that were communist goals towards the United States. Skousen revealed that many Americans were working for these same goals as the communists because they were unaware that the objectives were specifically designed to destroy the American system of freedom, democracy, and free markets. The book warned that Marxist-Leninists were urged to infiltrate the press and control it for their purposes. I experienced this firsthand as a reporter for the Washington Times. My usual disclaimer, this is a freelance project and not necessarily reflective of the Washington Times. So how does this happen in today's left-wing bias in the media? Many of today's news outlets have adopted destructive woke ideology practices. For example, the press demands that all news outlets must identify males who claim to be female as female, and females who identify as male to be labeled as male. This is not based on facts or science, but on ideology. Another example of Marxist manipulation of the media surfaced during the riots surrounding the death of George Floyd in the summer of 2020. The unrest was repeatedly and falsely described as mostly peaceful protests, despite large-scale burnings, lootings, and mass violence that caused numerous deaths. Little is discussed how the Marxist left successfully demonizes conservatives and religious believers. The goal is to delegitimize discussion of any ideas proposed by conservatives or religious believers. This practice really gained steam under President Barack Obama, who denigrated these Americans as, quote, clinging to their guns and religion, rather than supporting his progressivism, a euphemism for radical leftist dogmas. Dogmas that Obama was in many ways responsible for promoting during his presidency. Those dogmas now are being promoted even more aggressively by radicals working behind the scenes within President Joe Biden's administration. Another example of American Marxist influence can be seen in the blatant election interference in 2020 regarding details of corruption found in Hunter Biden's laptop, a computer that was uncovered in a Delaware repair shop. Technology companies acquiesced to false claims by former intelligence officials who published a big letter that said that the laptop was nothing more than a Russian disinformation ploy. The FBI, for its part, overreacted to the FBI's release of information in 2016, shortly before the presidential election that year, regarding Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton and her private email server. That system was found to contain highly classified information that was vulnerable to foreign theft. Based on new FBI procedures after 2016, the Bureau pressured major U.S. social media companies to suppress reporting and other information regarding the explosive content of Hunter Biden's laptop. The information included links to Chinese intelligence operatives and claims that, quote, the big guy, Joe Biden, was being paid off by the Chinese. Information on the laptop has since been validated as accurate by congressional investigators who now say there is clear evidence of national security compromises involving Chinese intelligence efforts to buy influence with the Biden family prior to Joe Biden running for president. The Naked Communist, the Skousen book that I mentioned, also identified plans to attack America's founding leaders. The goal was for the communists to identify these patriots not as patriots, but as selfish aristocrats with no concern for the so-called common people. The riots of 2020 included attacks on statues of American founders and other historical figures the Marxist left had labeled as racist. The statue smashing was a replay of the murderous excesses of the Chinese Cultural Revolution of the 1970s. Communist and Marxist infiltration of the American education system is perhaps one of the most destructive aspects of the communist drive to destroy America. Skousen, in his book, was more on target here in identifying the Marxist goal of subverting American education. As he put it, the communists were urged to get control of schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda, soften the curricula, get control of teachers' associations, put the party line in textbooks. Today, the majority of American universities are dominated by Marxist professors who for several decades have been teaching that the United States is a systemically racist system that must be overthrown, emphasizing grievance and victimhood, not sincerely but ideologically driven. The Marxist left is demanding the American system must be replaced with a socialist system under false claims it will produce equality and equity. As I mentioned earlier, socialism for communism is not an end in itself, but a transitory stepping stone on the road to achieving a historically inevitable totalitarian communism. The truth is, there will never be a communist workers' paradise because close examination of Marxist tactics and goals reveal it is a deception in the service of achieving ultimate unchecked power. It's not about righting wrongs or notions of equality and equity. Critical race theory remains the current neo-Marxist ideology that was promoted by the Marxist-led Black Lives Matter group. BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors described herself as a trained Marxist working for the revolutionary anti-capitalism. The BLM website also stated, as one of its goals, the destruction of the nuclear family, the traditional family led by a married man and woman. The goal was removed after it was written about in conservative media. The nation's schools remain a major target of Marxists who are working to force the adoption of some or all of critical race theory's most destructive tenets, ideas designed to sow division within American society and undermine the current U.S. system. Larry Sand, head of the California Teachers Empowerment Network, whose article alerted me to the Skousen book, said teachers' unions are closely aligned with Marxist ideology. As Sand put it, we must realize that no matter their rhetoric, teachers' unions are not beneficent organizations that care about children, their parents, taxpayers, or quality education. They are ruthless special interest groups that will stop at nothing to advance their agenda. Sand revealed that the National Education Association playbook was adapted directly from Marxist community organizer Saul Alinsky, who was hired by the NEA as a trainer in the 1960s. We're going to hear from Sand towards the interview portion of the podcast. Skousen, way back in 1958, accurately identified the crux of communist and Marxist revolution, the denial of God. Step 28 for communists, as revealed in The Naked Communist, is the elimination of prayer or any phase of religious expression in schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. Only a few years after the book was published, lo and behold, prayer in school was banned. But the secular religion of Marxism has continued to flourish throughout the education system at all levels, from kindergarten through graduate schools. Step 40 for the communists is discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. And step 41 emphasizes the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Attributable prejudices, mental blocks, and retarding of children to suppressive influence of parents is a goal. These goals are clearly being aggressively promoted as schools seek to deny parents any say in their children's education. The Marxist targeting of education led directly to the recent election of Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, who is now in power and is seeking to reverse radical school policies that sought to exclude parents. Other candidates in the recent midterm elections also ran against neo-Marxist controls over education. No other area of Marxist-supported subversion is more rampant than on the topic of gender identity. While God is banned in schools, schools are now promoting a highly destructive gender identity movement that encourages young children and teenagers that they may be a boy trapped in a girl's body or a girl trapped in a boy's body, and, alarmingly, that these youngsters can change their sexual identity and even hide it from their parents. The Naked Communist reveals that it has been a long-term communist objective to break down the American capitalist system by eliminating all laws regarding obscenity and to subvert cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in all media. This has produced a progressively intense drive to completely do away with sexual morality and promote sexual perversion and deviancy that is reaching outrageous levels. How else to explain the woke ideologists that are now seeking to defend pedophilia, the practice of illicit sex between adults and children, by seeking to relabel pedophiles as minor attracted persons? Or how else can we explain how gender identity extremists have convinced hospitals to allow so-called sexual reassignment surgery for children and teenagers who think they should be the opposite sex? This is the worst form of child abuse. Another example of this gross immorality is the promotion throughout the United States of holding drag queen shows at public libraries, specifically for children. This is extreme moral corruption and grooming youth to accept horrible immoral practices. Today, lack of morality is tearing at the very fabric of American society and providing Marxist-Leninists in the United States with fertile ground to promote their revolution. Nationally, the Biden administration has made gender identity into a false human rights movement. It is seeking to redefine sex in the Title IX rules regarding sports to include gender identity. These ideological activities threaten one of the basic principles of American society, that parents and not the state are the primary caretakers for children. Karl Marx once stated, "The education of all children from the moment that they can get along without a mother's care shall be in state institutions." This is the long march of Marxists through the institutions and is continuing at a breakneck speed and reaching the highest levels. No clearer example is available than the creation by President Biden and his White House of a new gender policy council to advance gender equity and equality, not just domestically, but in foreign policy, in all policies. The council was created by executive order in March 2021 and states that advancing gender equity and equality is a matter of human rights, justice, and fairness. It argues that it's a strategic imperative that reduces poverty and promotes economic growth, increases access to education, improves health outcomes, advancing political stability, and fosters democracy. This is a total misrepresentation of what's behind this gender identity strategy. Again, this is a false and part of a Marxist agenda of radicals within the Biden administration. In February, the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, produced a startling report that reveals how the Biden administration agenda of promoting this Marxist-backed gender ideology is a central tenet of all its policies, again, both foreign and domestic. The Biden strategy seeks to erase policies that respect biological differences between men and women. This agenda displaces biological sex with so-called gender identity and pushes abortion on demand, and in the process, usurps religious freedoms. This strategy sets President Biden's government on a revolutionary path that breaks with the American tradition of legal rights and equality. The strategy directs federal agencies to craft policies that ignore biological differences between men and women. The result is that this strategy, when implemented, would, as a matter of policy, erase women in both domestic and international affairs. It would entrench abortion on demand and set the government against conscience rights and religious freedom both at home and abroad. You can expect that radical Democrats, based on White House diktat, will produce more executive orders and try to push congressional legislation and regulations to promote radical gender identity ideology. The gender identity movement is key to American Marxist call for a revolutionary approach to making politics revolve around grievance and group identity. These are elements of destructive critical race theory. Once part of the Marxist fringe, the extremist fringe, the Marxists have successfully mainstreamed many of these ideological tenets that are used in shaping policy and law. As the Heritage Foundation report notes, with national strategy on gender equity and equality, they have reached the apex of political power. As Heritage explains, the Marxists are using a term called intersectionality that combines the idea of repression relating to both sex and race. This is a classic Marxist ideological tool for building ideological opposition to the capitalist system and working for its ultimate overthrow. On equity versus equality, we need to be clear. The White House is now using both terms, but they are clearly not synonyms. To American Marxists, equal treatment under law, equality, often fails to produce equal outcomes, that is, equity. Moreover, under the equity logic, which violates the most basic statistical methods, different outcomes are assumed to have one cause, injustice. Critical race theory paints such injustice in sinister racial hues. White supremacy results in, quote, immense disparity in wealth, access to resources, segregation, and thus family well-being. This meaning of equity casts Biden's gender strategy in a much dimmer light. Consider, for instance, the following. From the Emancipation Proclamation to the passage of the 19th Amendment to the Voting Rights Act and to the Civil Rights Act to the fight for reproductive rights and marriage equality, the countless movements and victories before and since, America has been strengthened through years by a tireless pursuit of greater equality for all. The strategy of the White House on gender also co-opts the term gender by promoting its twisted ideology. Gender is redefined not as biological sex, but as a subjective notion of gender identity with infinite varieties over the biological realities that there's simply two sexes, male and female. It was President Barack Obama's Department of Health and Human Services that launched this effort in 2015. That's when they sought to redefine sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity in Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. Although a slight change in verbiage, this set off a tectonic shift from the same-sex marriage debate to the transgender debate, which is now running rampant throughout our society and, as we can see, in the White House itself. The former involves the nature of marriage. The latter involves the nature of humanity itself. This strategy on gender is not about combating unfair discrimination. but advances an approach at odds with the Western concept of equality, which is grounded in the notion that we are all created equal and endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Following Marxist revolutionary class distinctions, the new gender ideology divides people into stereotypes of group identity. It creates a new caste system, and thus is being defining everyone as either an oppressor or an oppressed, categorically, regardless of the concrete details of their life. The new Marxist ideology is corrosive of freedom of religion, belief, and speech. The First Amendment to the Constitution, the fundamental rights of freedom, belief, and speech are guaranteed, as does the Universal Declaration of Human Rights guarantee those rights. To realize these mutually reinforcing rights, we must protect conscience and the right to manifest beliefs or religious convictions in public. These basic rights are threatened by efforts to promote abortion, contraception, sterilization, and controversial gender reassignment surgeries or hormonal interventions in the name of gender equality. Many medical professionals and faith-based institutions seek to protect life from conception to natural death, defend marriage as the union of one man and one woman, and defend the immutability of biological sex. Gender ideology represents a frontal assault on the freedom to act in accordance with these beliefs. Thus, these new policies are leading to restrictions on religious freedom. In more and more cases in the U.S. and other Western countries, laws against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and so-called gender identity have become a cudgel to force individuals to endorse a sexual orthodoxy against their consciences. In the early weeks of his presidency, President Biden issued a memorandum on advancing the human rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex persons around the world. It directed all U.S. government entities that engage abroad to weave gender ideology into their work, whatever the cost to religious freedom. Gender ideology is also encroaching on free speech around the world. This threat is most acute in places with laws regulating so-called hate speech, laws that are far more sweeping than prohibitions on speech that incites violence. The report by Heritage warns that the U.S. government should not endorse questionable rights based on membership in special identity groups. Doing so weakens the protection of fundamental rights grounded in human dignity. The U.S. government should abandon this dangerous Marxist-backed agenda and instead defend Americans' legal and human rights by upholding the Constitution and rule of law. Civil and political rights are enshrined in the Constitution, protected under federal and state laws. These provide ample tools for fighting cases of discrimination. And President Biden should reject the national strategy on gender equity and equality. His administration should return instead to the firm foundation of equality and biological reality. This requires recognizing rather than denying the innate differences between men and women. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
Hi, this is Bill Gertz. I wanted to talk to you briefly about my latest book. It's called Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. This is the most important book you can read to fully understand the threat posed by the Chinese Communist government. I urge you to get a copy today. It can be found at my website, The Gertz File, that's gertzfile.com, or at the book site called deceivingthesky.com.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to gofundme.com. Again, just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to gofundme.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. This is the counterproposal section of the podcast that I call the spiritual section. It is based on the teachings of the late Reverend Sun Myung Moon, whose divine principle provides the basis for what I'm calling the VOC worldview, a faith-based Judeo-Christian counterproposal to communism and Marxism. The key to countering the false ideology of communism is clearly understanding God, his existence, the purpose behind creating humans and the universe, identifying what went wrong early in human history, and how God has a concrete plan for restoring humankind back to an original relationship with the Creator. So, why was the universe created? It was for humans to love the universe. The magnitude of God's love for humanity is truly awe-inspiring. The Bible records God's initial blessings to mankind. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. Genesis 1:28. By this we understand that in order to give his children the actual experience of lordship, God created the entire universe as the home of humanity. Although we're learning many new things about the universe from the Webb Space Telescope, the universe is not simply cold and inert energy. The personality of God is actually projected into the universe, as well as humankind. Because the beings of the universe are partial reflections of God's character, the universe may be called the symbol of God, while men and women are the image of God. All beings in the created world respond to the love of humans, just as humans respond to the love of God. The natural world is ours to make beautiful or to abuse. We are gardeners, and the great garden of the universe depends on us to transmit God's love to it. So, has God's purpose of creation been fulfilled? No, it has not. The problem today is that God's purpose of creation has never been fulfilled. Humans are like a distorted mirror that fails to properly reflect God's image. We are separated from God and have perverted our original nature, thereby losing our original value. Therefore, we are not good objects of God's love. Men and women have failed to fulfill their original potential to respond to the love of God. This is the cause of human alienation. It is alienation from the love of God. In the parable of the prodigal son, Christ compared God to a human parent with children. If a child chooses to leave the parent and rejects the inheritance which the parent wishes to give him, the parent cannot stop him by force. He must allow him to leave. However, how would this parent feel? He'd be heartbroken. The situation of humankind today is even more serious and tragic because many people today do not even know that God exists. How can children respond to the love of their parent and return that love to him when they don't even know that the parent exists? In our world today, there is very little exchange of love taking place between God and humanity, and this is the worst tragedy for both God and humans. God is a God of deep feelings, and God is heartbroken over the loss of his children. God cannot receive joy or satisfaction from children who are spiritually deaf, dumb, and blind. The history of God has been the history of weeping for the sake of humanity, and thus far humanity never knew that God was suffering in this way. Still, God has never given up hope. His constant goal and determination is for humans to be restored to their original nature and value, and someday become a wholesome object of God, responding to God's love and returning joy, love, and glory to Him. On that day, God's joy and satisfaction will have no end. For the first time, the purpose of creation shall have been fulfilled. Until God experiences happiness from the freely loving response of human beings, the attempts of men and women to achieve their own happiness will always be in vain. When we as children of God relieve completely the pain of God, first, we solve the greatest problem of humankind as well, the search for love and happiness. The two problems are not separate, but they're interlocked. When God is living in joy, humans can also live in joy. People are frantically trying to be happy, but we can never achieve happiness if we neglect God. So, what are the characteristics of God? First, causality. Science is based on the assumption that there is no effect without cause, and there is an orderly relation between cause and effect. Specifically, there is not any characteristic in the realm of effect which has not existed first in the realm of cause. The universe, including humans, are in the realm of effect. God is the causal being. Thus, you can know God through examining the universe, as the attributes of the effect can tell us about the attributes of the cause, the characteristics of God. There is nothing in the universe, the effect, that does not come from the original image of God. In the early days of Christianity, St. Paul traveled to Rome and taught that there is one God who is transcendent of the physical universe. The Romans honored a pantheon full of gods. Each god served a particular purpose and each one had a shape and form. Romans could not understand how anyone could believe in one invisible God. St. Paul asked this question once and for all, and that answer is recorded in the Bible. For what can be known about God is plain because God has shown it to them. Ever since the creation of the world, His invisible nature, namely His eternal power and deity, have been clearly perceived in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. That's Romans 1:19 and 20. This passage clearly shows that by learning about the created world, you can also learn about the Creator, His characteristics, laws, and principles. God created all things and mankind. The universe may be called the indirect image of God, while human beings are created in God's direct image. Men and women are the supreme creations of God. By observing the universe and human beings in particular, we can learn about the characteristics of God. This clear understanding of the nature of God is absolutely essential to countering Marxist-Leninist ideology in all its forms, which again is the key feature of which is the denial of God. Next, I want to talk about the spiritual aspect of what is called horizontal polarity, positive and negative. All levels of creation, from human beings to animals, plants, minerals, and even the level of physico-chemical material, demonstrate the polarity of positivity and negativity. Here, I'm not using the terms positive and negative to mean anything other than a relationship between the two parts, not to imply good or evil or superior or inferior, sufficient or deficient. On the human level, there are two sexes, as seen in a man and a woman. In animals, there are male and female. In plants, generally, there are stamen and pistil. On the level of the physical-chemical material world, there is always a positive and negative part. Even a neutron particle can be divided to give a proton and an electron. These two attributes are found in relationship at every level. The polarity on every level of the universe is a reflection of the image of God, who also shares attributes of positive and negative, or masculine and feminine. That is, the creation reveals a continuous and increasingly complete expression of the masculine and feminine aspects of the image of God. All things are created as a manifestation of God's complete image. That includes male and female, positive and negative. I call this horizontal polarity in God's image. Even if you look at the universe, they're trying to understand the nature of a black hole, something that is sucking in both space and time and gravity. It's very likely that scientists, when they really understand this principle of polarity, they'll recognize that there's a positive gravity and energy and pulling, expanding outward, as well as a deeply recessed in a black hole gravity that's going inward. Protons and electrons express to some degree the polar attributes of the first cause, but there is a further progression such that when we arrive at the level of human beings, we encounter marked differences in physical structure, personality, and emotions between men and women. All these characteristics are expressions of the personality and character of God. Just as there is a horizontal polarity, vertical polarity also exists, and that is reflected in the attributes of what I'm calling internal and external. This is another type of polarity, that of internal character and external form. Humans have a mind and a body. Mind does not refer only to the mental processes of a person, but rather to all of the internal aspects and personality. The body expresses this internal character. Your face, for example, reveals your emotions. We may try to conceal our feelings, but those who study body language assure us that the body is continuously expressing, consciously or not, the emotions and feelings of the mind. This is also true for the animal realm. Animals have an instinctive mind that expresses itself in the form and behavior of its body. With respect to plants, experiments have shown that they have a kind of mind that organizes cells to form the body of the plant. This plant mind directs the growth of the plant and determines its form, height, shape of leaves, etc. This mind also guides the leaves towards the sun and the roots towards the water. Even on the level of minerals and physicochemical constituents, the same polar attributes are found. Material is organized according to inherent directive nature that causes energy to form a body. That is, an atom is a manifestation of some character. Atoms obey laws. A proton always makes a date with an electron, never with another proton. Sodium atoms always react with chlorine atoms to form salt, following a series of laws that constitute one aspect of the inherent directive nature of the material. In this way, it's logical to make another generalization regarding God. Since all things in the universe have mind and body, then the cause of the universe, God, must have within him these same qualities of internal character and external form. This would be completely in accord with what we have discussed regarding the scientific view of the universe. We know the universe is made of fields of energy, but there must be an internal character that is organizing the energy. The internal character of God is the source of the internal character of the universe, and the external form of God is God's invisible nature or character manifested in reality. This is the creation. Therefore, the character of each creation resembles God's own character. The creation is like a mirror that reflects God's image, and men and women are the children who reflect the parents' characteristics. Creation is the manifestation of the individual image of God. Stay tuned for more from the VOC podcast. I'll be right back.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters.
Welcome back. This is the news portion of the podcast. President Biden campaigned for the presidency with a promise to unite the country. Once in power, however, Biden adopted a hard left policy agenda promoting radical Marxist policies of racialism, gender identity, and climate change. His administration is emerging as a third term of the administration of Barack Obama, who recently took to the campaign trail to support Democrat candidates, many of whom were defeated by an electorate angry with the woke radical policies that have the support of both communists and Marxists. Biden who did not campaign during the recent midterm elections, repeatedly denounced Republicans as fascists and threats to democracy with no evidence that this is the case. Biden was echoing the divisive policies of Obama, who in recent speeches deplored the divisions within the country that he, more than any president in recent history, did so much to create. Let's not forget that it was Obama who set the tone for our current divide by promoting the left-wing vocabulary now embraced by Marxist and communist leftists in their drive to destroy the United States. It was Obama who labeled lower working classes in America as deplorables, dregs, chumps, irredeemables who cling to their guns and religion and thus oppose the leftist agenda of immorality and godlessness. Obama was out on the campaign trail promoting the false narratives of the Democrats that Republicans will cut Social Security and that the MAGA Republicans are semi-fascist captives of Donald Trump, when it is the Democrats that turned over the party to Marxists and radicals engaged in destructive woke hysterics. The scare tactics of the Democrats in the midterm campaigns were over the top, with accusations that Republicans will kill women by denying abortions or arresting women who have them. As the eminent commentator Victor Davis Hanson noted on Obama's inflammatory propaganda, on and on Obama shouts about social justice, and then he wraps up and must decide to which of his mansions he will fly home to by a private jet, whether it's Kalorama in D.C., Martha's Vineyard, Hyde Park, or soon Waimanalo in Hawaii. Obama never mentioned the disastrous state that Democrat policies under Biden have left the country. Failed energy policies now bankrupting the middle class that were simply a reification of his Energy Secretary Stephen Chu's perverse wishes for European priced gas. He said, somehow we have to figure out how to boost the price of gasoline to levels in Europe. Well, that's what they've done. There's nothing about Obama's old boasts about shutting down coal plants or skyrocketing electricity. He said once, under my plan, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Obama said not a word about his efforts to create a binary nation of oppressors and oppressed, as Obama himself determined who is the victim and who the victimizer. But it was Biden himself that provided the most radical attacks during the campaign by claiming he has identified a list of election denialists running for Congress who he feared would win and threaten the entire democratic system of governance. Biden's lies were many. The death of his son, the circumstances under which his first wife died in a car wreck, the fantasy congressional vote on his student loan forgiveness scheme. As Hanson noted, Biden was nominated by Democrats solely as a thin veneer to a hard-left agenda whose avatars were unelectable. Biden was to feign being the colorless stand-in moderate who would unify the fractured country, tone down Trump rhetoric, and let the Trump record sort of proceed on autopilot. Then, when he played out that part and won, the leftist minders in this Faustian bargain took over to push through on a one-vote senatorial margin, the most radical left-wing agenda in history. Instead of affordable, affable Scranton Joe, we now have a mean-spirited blowhard and an obnoxious messenger, now making the noxious message even more toxic. Leftists and Marxists now fill the Biden administration with key positions in legal departments and human resource departments of key agencies. Biden literally turned over the reins of government to them, and they are systematically destroying America in an attempt to replace the capitalist system with its freedom and democracy with a socialist communist system of tight government control. In so doing, Americans are able to cut through the fog of deception used so expertly by Marxists to hide their true goals and intentions. The older generation of Democrats, like Biden, Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, are of no use to the new leftist radicals. The Marxist ideology is facing a backlash from the midterm elections, with Democrats, even before the results were in, claiming the voting was rigged by Republicans. Talk about election deniers. One group is preparing for a Republican return to power in 2022 and perhaps 2024. It's a group called American First Legal, launched by Trump aide Stephen Miller. Miller and America First Legal have created a database called the Woke Wagon that is listing all the hard left political appointees put in place under Biden. The group declared on its website that the Biden administration is on a fast track to being both the most radical and most destructive presidential administration in American history. Despite selling itself as a moderate and dealmaker, President Biden has filled the federal government with thousands of woke, liberal, neo-Marxist activists. The list is relatively new and followed legal action by the group to obtain comprehensive lists of Biden political appointees through the Freedom of Information Act. The list includes the resumes of many activists, like Laura E. Durso, the chief of staff at the Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights. Her resume, posted online, shows a long list of positions promoting radical gender identity policies. Other radicals are in positions of power and influence include those in the Education Department, the Office of Civil Rights, and the State Department, Commerce Department, and White House. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
I spoke to you earlier about my book, Deceiving the Sky. I also wanted to urge you to take a look at another book that I wrote called iWar, War and Peace in the Information Age. We live in an information age, and yet we're getting bombarded with enemy propaganda coming at us from all different directions. iWar really helps expose what we need to do and how we need to counter it. I urge you to get a copy. The book can be found at iwarbook.com or at my website, thegertzfile.com.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm joined now by Larry Sand. Larry is a former school teacher and now president of the California Teachers Empowerment Network. The network is a nonpartisan, nonpolitical group of educators that supports open democratic dialogue on issues of education. The network seeks to promote reliable and balanced information and peer support for teachers who may have dissenting views or make decisions that could invite criticism or strained relations. In August, Larry wrote the article I mentioned earlier in the podcast that was published by the Heartland Institute, with the title U.S. Schools Get Bad Marks, with Marks spelled M-A-R-X. The article helped shape the first portion of the podcast. It examines this book that I mentioned, the book by Cleon Skousen, who Larry notes was eerily prescient in outlining the current state of destructive woke ideology in all its many forms now plaguing society. The book lists 45 steps of current communist goals. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'd like to ask you about step 17 in the book, The Naked Communist. Get control of schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum, get control of teachers' associations, put the party line in textbooks. This is clearly happening in the form of critical race theory and other radical notions like the policies to promote extremist gender identity advocates. You noted in the piece that the teachers' unions, there is a certainly what you said was the stench of Marxism. I'm sure this is accurate. Please elaborate for our listeners.
Well, I mean, the teachers' unions are far left of center. They always have been. When they give money, it's only, and I mean only, to left-wing causes. They occasionally will support a Republican, but only if there are two Republicans running in a race, then they'll support the more left of the Republicans or the least conservative of the Republicans, of the two Republicans. And, yeah, Skousen's book, it just blew me away. You talk about prophetic. Everything he said is coming true right now. And he wrote this in 1958, and it's been happening all along. It's been known as the Long March Through the Institutions. It's been actually happening 100 years now. Just one quick thing. There's a famous saying that the purpose of a university is to make a man as least like his son as possible. It sounds like something that Abby Hoffman would have said in the 1960s, but it was actually Woodrow Wilson said it over 100 years ago when he was a president of Princeton. And this long march has been happening since then. And all I can say is that Skousen just nailed it. He just outed all the correct outables he outed.
Yes, I've spoken frequently about the Long March Through the Institutions of America. I followed this going back to the 60s with the New Left after they got their heads beat in at the Chicago convention in 68. They shifted tactics and decided to go in, and I think they culminated in reaching their Long March goals under Obama and now under Biden. I was surprised to read in your piece about the National Education Association utilized the ideas and policies advocated by Marxist community organizer Saul Alinsky. How did Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals, operate in the NEA?
Okay, well, it was interesting because originally the NEA was founded over 100 years ago, and they were known as the National Teachers Association, and it was an honest-to-God association. It was not a union. And then the American Federation of Teachers came along much later, and they were a union, and the NEA was losing market share. So in order to compete with AFT, NEA hired Alinsky, and they've been following his diktats ever since.
Wow, that's amazing. So they certainly have a radical culture in their organization. I've noticed how they definitely have opposed charter schools and any kind of really real reforms in education that are kind of urgently needed right now.
Yeah, they oppose anything that's basically good for children. They're there for teachers, period. Yeah. Yeah. Not that they hate children per se, but children are not their primary concern. Teachers are. And more importantly, the radical agenda is really number one. And then number two are teachers. And then children are number three. But of course, they can't say this. So they come out and they present themselves as child friendly, which is, sort of like the wolf in Little Red Riding Hood pretending he's, a good guy. It's a joke. And people have to wake up to this. I mean, that's why I write. It's the prime focus of my writing is trying to wake people up to what's going on in the schools, because it's terrible.
It's really a problem, I know. Yeah, so you're doing great work. You also mentioned Cicely Myard Cruz, the socialist leader of the United Teachers of Los Angeles, who in 2021 justified the lockdowns in schools using certain ideology. Can you explain that a little bit, what she was talking about?
Well, I mean, the unions were really behind the shutdowns, and and the unions are, with Black Lives Matter and all the left-wing stuff, yet the blacks were the most hurt subgroup by the lockdowns, which the teachers unions mandated. Cicely Myard Cruz, who's the head of the United Teachers of Los Angeles, the teachers union in L.A., is an out socialist, and she, in her famous quote was, after they were locked down for over a year in Los Angeles, said, "There's no such thing as learning loss. Our kids didn't lose anything. It's okay that our babies may have not learned all their times tables. They learned resilience. They learned survival. They learned critical thinking skills. They know the difference between a riot and a protest. They know the words insurrection and coup." Now, I have no words. There's nothing I can say to that. She shows where her priorities are, and I'm very glad she said that.
It's real eye-opener. Yeah. The last question. The book, The Naked Communist by Skousen, listed step 28, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in schools on the ground that it violates the principle of separation in church and state. Few years after that, after 1958, prayer was banned in school. But you made the point that today we're seeing a largely Marxist agenda flourishing. What needs to be done to counteract this trend?
Well, I keep banging this drum, Bill, that parents need to wake up and confront their school, confront their teachers, sit in classes if they can, go to school board meetings, run for school board, go to the politicians, demand school choice. I'm what's called an abolitionist. I don't think the government should be running schools, period. I think all schools should be privatized, just the way supermarkets are. You know, the left likes to say, oh, well, you know, it's too important to leave, to private individuals. Baloney. You let people shop at the market wherever they feel like shopping. If they, you know, the store down the street sells rancid vegetables at a high price, they can go across town and get better food and at cheaper prices. Why? And they should be able to do this in education. And that is the ultimate. But but getting the government out of education is a long shot. So as I said before, parents just need to get more involved, go to school board meetings, visit their schools, talk to the principals, talk to the teachers, etc.
Yeah. We've been talking with Larry Sand, president of the California Teachers Empowerment Network. Larry, how can people access you on social media and the network on the Internet?
Well, basically, you can go to my organization at c10home.org, c-t-e-n-h-o-m-e.org. I also write regularly for Front Page Magazine, or Heartland Institute, as you know, American Greatness. I've got a pretty good footprint, thankfully, so because I have a big mouth, as you can probably tell. I just feel the need to get my word out.
That's great. Thanks very much. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
That's it for this episode of Victory Over Communism. I'm your host, Bill Gertz. Please check out the website, victoryovercommunism.net, for more information and for links on how to contact the show. And please help me keep this important podcast going by donating. There is a link to donate at the bottom of victoryovercommunism.net. Once again, thank you for listening and tune in again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to Victory Over Communism with award-winning national security journalist Bill Gertz, the only program in the free world unafraid to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how the Communist Party of China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. See you next time on Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.